The deadly shooting at two mosques in New Zealand is reverberating here in the United States. On Fox News this morning, White House Strategic Communications Director Mercedes Schlapp described the president's response to it.
He made it very clear this is an act of terror. This is a horrific, evil crime, especially targeting these innocent lives at a place of worship. And again, we condemn this. We stand with the families, the people of New Zealand. And the president will be reaching out this afternoon to the prime minister of New Zealand.
Let's bring in our Friday Politics Roundtable. NPR White House reporter Ayesha Roscoe and NBC senior politics editor Beth Fooey. Welcome to both of you. And let's start with the situation in New Zealand. It has been widely reported that the shooter praised President Trump in writing as, quote, a symbol of renewed white identity and common purpose. Beth, how does the White House handle something like that in a tragedy like this?
Yeah, that's a tough one. What I was really struck by in the responses out of the White House, and Mercedes Schlapp, that soundbite that you just played, said that he made it clear that it was an act of terror. The tweet that he sent out initially did not. He did not mention terror. He did not mention Muslims. He did not mention mosque. So he was definitely addressing this in a different way than perhaps other tragedies in the past that have involved shooters of the Islamic faith. So we're seeing a kind of confusing message out of the White House right now about how exactly to condemn this.
I just wanted to correct one thing there. He did actually say after the horrible massacre in the mosques. However, to your point, his response to this did not come for, I think, 11 hours after the attack actually took place.
That's correct. And he had, in the meantime, posted that article in Breitbart that got a lot of pickup yesterday and overnight, where he seemed to suggest that the military and armed people were with him. So it was a sort of a discordant message coming out on a day of tragedy and terror like this one.
Okay, we're going to follow the story out of New Zealand throughout the show today. But Ayesha, I want to ask you about some other news that is happening. North Korea is saying today that it is considering suspending talks with the United States. This would be a big blow on the issue of denuclearization for the White House. How are they characterizing what happened?
Well, so this is what the White House is saying, basically, and what the administration is saying, that this is basically rhetoric coming out of North Korea that has happened before. And we have had instances since you've kind of had this cool down and talks between President Trump and Kim, where at times things do seem to kind of fall apart a bit. North Korea will lash out at, you know, various U.S. officials and say you're not negotiating fairly and things of that nature, but then come back to the table. And so it seems like what the U.S. is trying to do is saying maybe this is just another one of those times. This is rhetoric. They're kind of blowing off steam, but not necessarily going to actually walk away. It is important to note that even though they did talk about Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and talked about National Security Advisor John Bolton, they talked about them in a negative way. They didn't talk about Trump in a negative way. They said that right. He and Kim still have this mysteriously wonderful chemistry. Huh. So they don't seem to be throwing the whole relationship away,
Beth,
just yet.
Beth, what do you make of that? Is it a sign that all is not lost here?
Well, it's been puzzling right from the beginning that President Trump and others in the administration thought that they could negotiate with North Korea in an honest way, as if they were another normal negotiating partner. That's just never been the case for the United States and North Korea. And for some reason, President Trump has believed that because he's got that magical, wonderful chemistry or whatever you want to call it with Chairman Kim, that he could have a different type of relationship and maybe reach a breakthrough. The government there is just not the kind of government that is going to quickly accede to the kind of expectations that the Trump administration has had. So the comments from the foreign minister today really just sort of, basically establish what has been the case all along, which is that that regime is not playing ball with this White House.
The president is going to issue his first veto of his presidency this afternoon. This after 12 Republican senators joined Democrats to block the president's emergency declaration, which he was using to use money not appropriated by Congress to build a border wall. Utah Republican Mike Lee, said this on the Senate floor, basically saying this isn't a rebuke, but...
This is not about the president. This is not about my disagreement with or disapproval of the president or his approach to border security or his desire to build a barrier along our southern border. I think all those things need to happen. But this law, Mr. President, is wrong. It's not President Trump's fault. It's Congress's.
Aisha, how big of a deal is it that 12 Republicans voted to block this emergency declaration?
It's a big deal. Obviously, President Trump will veto this, and it's not likely that there will be enough support to override it. That doesn't seem to be the case. So he'll be able to go on with this emergency declaration until the courts, or unless the courts step in. But it is a rebuke from these Republicans. Trump had lobbied them to stay the course and not to vote against him. And he made this an issue, saying if you vote this way, you're voting with Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. You're voting against border security. So he made it clear what he wanted Republicans to do. And these 12 Republicans didn't go along with that. So that does show that there may be some limits here.
Well, and Beth, are they going to face repercussions from the president for doing this?
Well, what really struck me, and it's true that 12 broke with him, which is more than we've seen in the past, but the senators, Republican senators running for re-election in 2020, with the exception of Senator Susan Collins of Maine, voted with President Trump. So those who were facing voters the soonest definitely made the calculation that it was better to stand with the president mm-hmm. rather than defy him, just showing that still the power that he has with Republican voters. And these folks don't want to gin up a primary challenge on their right. So they decided to go ahead and stay with the president.
Aisha, before we get to 2020, I want to ask you about, you know, will this vote or could this vote be used to bolster the legal arguments against the president's declaration that are sure to be coming?
You know, I'm not sure about that. I think that these issues are going – there are a lot of questions about whether the president has this authority and whether a court would actually step in. Usually they're kind of reticent to step in on issues of national security and kind of limit the president in this way. So I think – I don't know that this vote in and of itself will have a big impact on the courts, but it's something that I guess could be brought up.
Okay, Beth, big 2020 news this week. Here's former Congressman Beto O'Rourke campaigning for president not long after he announced his candidacy at a sandwich shop in Iowa yesterday.
We've never been more divided or polarized, more riven by partisanship. We need to come together, damn the differences, find the things that we share in common, and go after it and get it done. And that's the way that I've operated. That's the way that I want to operate going forward.
Now, President Trump has called O'Rourke's hand gesturing crazy, which you would have noticed if you'd seen any of the videos of his day on the campaign trail. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says he has the experience to be president. What do you think about how he did on his first day?
He's definitely trying to follow the Obama campaign of 08 model. Basically, a very charismatic, somewhat new to the scene presence who doesn't necessarily have the experience that other candidates are going to bring to the table, but has a lot of vision, has a message of unity, particularly in the times that we're living in where people are so very divided and so polarized. He is sort of rolling the dice that people actually want to hear something positive and uplifting and motivating. And even if he doesn't have the experience other candidates do, he can bring voters around to him with that message. The question is that message, which worked so well for President Obama back when he first started to run in 2007, the right message for 2019, when people are very polarized, where people are very angry, where the Democratic base, the electorate, really wants to see President Trump gone. They want to hear loud criticism of the president and to define differences. So Beto O'Rourke has definitely taken this page from the Obama playbook. It's just a question of whether it's the right message this year.
Well, and he also, I guess, would be looking at his race against Ted Cruz last year when he came within points of winning in Texas. So he must have been able to win over some Republicans to do that well in that state with his message. But Aisha, the criticism of him, one of them right now and coming from Democrats, is where does he stand on anything? He hasn't really come out with a big policy prescription.
He hasn't. And so that's the big question is like, so what is he really for? Unity. But what does that mean? And how does that actually play out in people's kind of daily lives? Now, obviously, most people, when they are, you know, just getting into a candidate or looking into a candidate's views, they're not necessarily looking for these big policy prescriptions. They're not necessarily reading all these policy papers, but eventually he's going to have to take a stand on something. And I'm sure with, especially with a field this crowded, people are going to try to kind of get him to say, where do you stand on these things? Where do you stand on these issues? What are you for? And so he's going to have to kind of shore up that part of his platform, or to come up with a platform. Why are you voting for him other than just we need to all come together?
Hey, Beth, just real quick, which Democrat do you think was most upset about Beto getting into the race?
That's a great question. I mean, with such a big field, the entrance of somebody like him just because of his celebrity status is going to affect the whole mm-hmm. scene. That said, specifically who it's most likely to affect, my guess it will be in a short term sort of Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, kind of
people
where the progressives
energy,
might be
right.
going. Yeah, where the energy yeah. and maybe Joe Biden, who right. has yet to get in. He'll be the opposite, polar opposite of him in
we'll
terms of experience and age.
Talk about it next week. Beth Fooey and Ayesha Roscoe, thank you.
Thank you.